This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan with Lim Soo Ann and Sumitra Selvaraj. Here are our stories today. First up, a conference in Cambridge brought together the experts who construct fictional languages like Dothraki and Klingon. So we explore the appeal of these constructed languages.
And Kim Kardashian West has just debuted a line of undergarments and branded them Kimono Solution Wear. Should she have picked a name that isn't exactly the same as the national dress of Japan?
And on that note, we're asking you on Twitter, is kimono an appropriate name for Kim Kardashian West's new line of undergarments? So your options are yes, it's cool, no, it's offensive, or stop being so sensitive. So you can share any thoughts you have with us by tweeting us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can also call us at 03-7733-2900.
So before we get to our first story, here is Sun Club with Language Juice.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
That was Language Juice by Sun Club. Speaking of language, if you are a Game of Thrones fan, you should recognize this clip of Dothraki.
So if
you're more of a Tolkien fan, here's some Elvish for you.
Megovanin, Legolas Thranduilion.
Govanna Svinguinen, Haldirolorien.
And we don't want to leave out the Trekkies, so here's some Klingon.
Where's Kike? Duj vets onuk. Duj vets onuk. Rin. Duj vets onuk. Rin.
So why are we going on about these made-up languages?
Yes, Sharmila, why are we?
Because, you know, it's a Friday and I thought some Klingon or Elvish was in order. But also because earlier this week, the Language Creation Society had a, and yes, there is one, in case you thought I made that one up, had a convention in Cambridge that brought together people who construct languages or conlangers, as they're called, constructing languages, as they're known.
And this Language Creation Society currently has 185 members across the world in 27 countries. And the society was actually created back in 2007 to promote the art, craft and science of language creation.
The society came into prominence in recent years when the producers of the Game of Thrones TV show got in touch with them, right? To find a language creator, what did you say? Conlanger. To develop Dothraki into a proper spoken language. While Dothraki is language spoken by a particular race of people in the Game of Thrones books, author George R.R. Martin never actually crafted the entire language. In fact, I remember reading the books that there weren't that many Dothraki words or phrases or certainly conversations as there was in the series. It was actually a linguist called David J. Peterson, who's also a member of the Language Creation Society, who was tasked with devising the entire language for the TV series.
Yes. And so the most famous example of someone doing this prior to this is actually the Lord of the Rings author, J.R.R. Tolkien, who developed entire languages for much of his work. Elvish is probably the one that most of us immediately think of, especially from the Lord of the Rings movies. But he's constructed so many others. He's he's got a full developed Dwarvish language. He's got, various types of Mannish languages, which the race of man speak. And Tolkien himself was what is called a philologist, or someone who studied literary and historical texts and languages. So it's really no surprise that this was a particular passion for him. And he called the art of doing this, this art of constructing languages, glossopoeia, from the Greek words for language and make. Sort of the same way mythopoeia is the you know, the art of creating mythologies. Yes. So it's no surprise that he's also the sort of OG of the Conlang world. You know, he's the one that many language creators look up to and take inspiration from when it comes to this idea of constructing a language from scratch.
He actually came up with Elvish even before writing Lord of the Rings.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So he actually came up with the structure of the language way before he had started writing the novels themselves. So this is really his first love.
Mm. And the other language that comes to mind when you think of constructed languages, especially if you're a Star Trek fan, is Klingon. Mm-hmm. So within the Star Trek universe, the Klingon language is spoken by the Klingon people. And it first appeared on screen in 1979 in Star Trek The Motion Picture. So there were only a few lines spoken in that movie, but in 1984 for the Star Trek 3 movie, the creators wanted the Klingons to speak a proper language. So they actually commissioned a full language based on the phrases that were used in the previous movie.
Mm.
And so the Klingon language was constructed by Mark Okrand and now has whole dictionaries and clubs devoted to it.
Some very passionate clubs at that.
Mm-hmm. There's also the book Watership Down about a colony of rabbits. Its author Richard Adams came up with a language called Lapine. I think it's
Lapine or Lapine. I'm not sure.
From French Lapin,
yeah,
which
perhaps
means rabbit.
Yes.
Anyway, the language is supposed to feel wuff-fluffy. I think that's a term that he used to describe it. And although there's only a few lines of the language that actually appear in the text, fans of the book have since developed it into a functional language with its own grammar and vocab.
And that's actually quite a common thing for fans to, you know, sort of carry this on from when the creator left it. You know, and that's actually what happened with the movie Avatar as well, the 2009 blockbuster movie by James Cameron.
Mm.
James Cameron wanted his alien race of people in the movie to have a fully developed language.
Of course he did.
Yes, of course, because why not? And that's how the Na'vi language came about. He tapped on linguist Paul Frommer, who created an extensive vocabulary and grammar for the giant blue beings.
Mm.
And fans have since continued to build on this. And there are fans who can speak Na'vi.
Mm.
I suppose this is, in a way, an earlier version of fan fictiondom, isn't it?
It's both it's fandom, but it's also a way of being really immersed in the world because you literally speak this language that no one else but fans of that particular text or a movie speak. And it's really sort of being that inner circle of something.
But you've got to admit, it takes a special sort of person to become a Conlanger.
Yes, I think so.
Dr. Oliver Mayo, who has a PhD in linguistics from Cambridge University, said in a BBC article that building a language from scratch is a very personal thing. He says, quote, "It's like poetry or painting. People who do it have a natural expressiveness and admiration for the language. We don't do it for fame or notoriety. We're a rather eccentric tribe of language nerds coming together to discuss their creations," unquote. I love that.
I love that. I feel like this is a society I want to belong to. Although I'll be thoroughly incapable of crafting any language.
We'll just learn one of the languages.
Yes, that's true. We'll be a fan of the Conlangus.
There you go.
That is true.
So while constructing entire languages is really no small feat, it is something that captures fans in a very deep way, right? And there's something so poetic and beautiful about that idea. I spoke earlier to writer Zedek Siu, who is a Malaysian writer who writes a lot within the speculative fiction genre, to get his thoughts on constructing languages for fiction. So Zedek, as a writer and reader of fantasy and science fiction, what does it add to the story when the author works out a whole separate language for the characters and the cultures that are in the book?
I guess as a reader, it is a because it's a constructed language, so you couldn't possibly be familiar with it. There's a sense evoked of unfamiliarity. So I remember very, like, in the past when Tolkien first wrote Lord of the Rings, critics at the time didn't like that he had large passages of words they couldn't understand. But I think that's part of the pleasure of having a constructed language in fiction. It's an emphasis that the world is not our own.
And what does it do in terms of the world building, you know, in terms of, because that's a large part of what makes up, you know, genres like fantasy and science fiction.
It adds solidity because, like, sometimes you can use, well, it is easy to tell when a writer is cheating. The construct language is not really a language. It's just words being swapped out or, like, weird syllables being used. The purpose of making a whole language for your story or your piece of writing is that the culture you are describing or the culture that you are telling a story of is given some kind of solidity. Like, there's rules to the language. There are boundaries. There are ways in which they use the language that make an internal sense. My favorite kinds of, like, made-up languages in fictions are the ones that use... that are there to mainly to serve describing the culture of the society that uses that language. Le Guin is very good at this.
Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah, Ursula Le Guin has a book called Always Coming Home, and in this book is my current favorite constructed language. The book is largely a kind of ethnography of a culture, a post-collapse culture in the Napa Valley, and primarily she constructed a language because she was making music for that culture. And if you're going to have people singing, she needed something they would sing. So she made a whole language for the book.
And that's actually one of the things about language, isn't it? That language is not just a means of translating words. It's a means of conveying particularities of a culture.
That's the interesting thing about constructed languages. Beyond just the initial alienness, it's also... illuminates how people live. So, for example, in the Le Guin book I mentioned, she's got a section about how people have really long names for their houses, and it's a way of emphasizing that people live in places and, like, over generations, and the meanings get stacked on each other. It's got a whole glossary on how people relate to each other, aunts and brothers and grand uncles and adopted grand uncles, showing how relational that culture is. It's not so simple as the sort of supper wharf thing where, you know, language determines how you think, but it definitely determines or is informed by the culture you come from.
And why do you think fans of, you know, these works get so taken up with these languages to the point of wanting to learn them and wanting to communicate in them?
When it's about the fans and, like, Star Trek fans talking in Klingon, or people who love Lord of the Rings to the extent that they try to learn Elvish like I did when I was a kid. I think it's more to do with a kind of, like, a sort of solidarity with other people like you. So you start learning the language because you love the work, but you start trying to speak it with other people because it's an in-group sort of dialect. It's kind of the same way, like, you know, a couple starts having their own personal sort of vocabulary after a while. There's an element of community with these kinds of fandoms that start deploying that language and start using that language.
Now, I know you write fantasy or speculative fiction. Have you ever thought about developing a language or a mode of communication that was specific to the kind of worlds that you might be writing about?
I'm not sure. I thought about this and, like, about the curious reasons why I don't feel particularly attracted to the idea. I think and this is kind of like a really shaky assumption, but I think a lot of where these constructed languages comes from, they come from places or contexts where writers are writing from kind of generally monocultural places. So the instinct to find novelty or to find surprise is great. Whereas I, as a writer in this context, find surprise because there's so much of this context because of the way our societies are divided that I don't know. That the music of everyday life is already so... there's so much surprise in it for me. I wouldn't say I'd consider making a made-up language for my fiction right now where I am.
That was Zedek Siu, who is a writer himself. His most recent publication was an illustrated book called Creatures of Near Kingdoms. I found that last point he made really interesting, this whole idea that by and large, writers or creators who make up these constructed languages tend to be from monocultural societies.
Yes, because they're looking for an element of the exotic when it comes to dialogue and communication, which really doesn't apply to us here in Malaysia. Unfortunately, we speak so many languages as it is.
And it really doesn't, isn't it? You just step out and buy food. You're already using like 3-4 different languages in one sentence.
And we live so close to people who don't speak the same language as us. We encounter them in our everyday. So, yes, I like that phrase he used, the music of the everyday, I think he said, where, yes, we for us, the idea of something being so different that we need to make it up to encounter it almost feels unnecessary.
No, Manglish is a constructed language, isn't it? It does have its own glossary and it does have its own peculiarities.
Yeah, well, this is probably a conversation that can go on forever, but we do need to wrap up this segment. Very quickly, we are running a poll on social media for our next story.
On which we're asking you, is kimono an appropriate name for Kim Kardashian West's new line of undergarments? Your options are yes, it's cool, no, it's offensive, or stop being so sensitive. So you can continue to tweet us your thoughts at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can also call us at 03-7733-2900.
And before we go, Sumitra has a line in Klingon that I think is very appropriate for this segment.
Can't throw me into not yap whole.
And what does that mean?
It means one language is never enough.
Isn't that lovely? Yes, we can all do with learning more than one language, I think. We will be back after a short break, but first here is Enya with May It Be.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.